Senate Commerce Committee will come to order, and let's take up first Senate Joint Resolution 39. Now, this is the American Small and Independent Business Bill of Rights. This was recommended by the White House Conference on Small Business to be introduced in every state that had delegates there, and of course every state did. How many states have introduced it, I don't know. It was also one of the top 15 out of 60 that was sent to the President of the United States for him to recommend to Congress, as well as to be introduced by the states. So, as I think we all know, the small businessman is sort of beat over the head, regulated like big business, and taxed like big business, but he has less tax credits than big business. So that's what it was all about. And if you look in your folder here, we don't have a single derogatory comment. They're all real good comments. Everybody's tickled to death with it. And if you want any more, I can talk for about another 30 minutes, but I don't think you want to hear it. So if anybody feels inclined to make a motion, I'm very receptive.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask unanimous consent we pass out SJR 39 with
individual
recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, I would just point out that although the intent is excellent, I think some of the wording is very unrealistic. I'm most aware that it is a resolution, and that's what it is, but I will, we won't spend time going into the detail, but obviously there are times when government interference is necessary and desirable in the public interest, and, you know, it's a very positive statement. I understand what we're doing.
Okay.
Being a small business person, I say that.
Yeah, I've had four of them, and I know the trials and tribulations. I had three my first year down here, but I sold them rapidly after 6 months down here. I put all of mine up here, Jen, before us. Now, let us take up next Senate Bill 468. What this does, Dankworth was here, but I told him he didn't have to stay. We've got someone else to testify on. Now you have to, by federal law, get permission from the legislature to operate.
What are you talking about? Which one now?
This is the foreign trade zones. All this does is if Anchorage wants to have commerce with some foreign country, they can go ahead on their own without the...
What's the number on this? I'm sorry.
That's 468. So, Ron, would you like to give us your testimony on this bill?
Yes, Senator. Would you like to move forward there?
Yes, if you would, please. They're supposed to have one of these mics suspended over that table, but hasn't been done yet, but it's been recommended.
Okay, hi. My name is Ron Walton. I'm with the State of Alaska Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 468. And my testimony is an approach which we feel this is a positive approach to foreign trade zones. We're in favor of the state preparing to install foreign trade zones and to make it legally possible to do so, and that is one of the basic elements in installing a foreign trade zone. And the municipality of Anchorage has chosen to take the initiative and apply to the state for this authority, and as you indicated, Senator, a requirement of the law that any entity choosing to install a foreign trade zone must have state authority to do so, and this is the intent of this bill. Therefore, we are in favor, and I can make, if you desire, general comments in favor of foreign trade zones in the state of Alaska. We do see some possibilities of foreign trade zones. I'd like to elaborate a little bit on those now.
Please, sir.
I have traveled most recently on behalf of the Bell Barley Project in so doing, we spent a lot of time in the ports of Alaska, and we spent a lot of time talking to some of the foreign shippers moving in out of state, and we asked the customs to supply us with little statistics, and one very interesting piece of data we came across here the other day was that for the port of Seward, apparently there were 67 foreign vessel callings in 1959 in the port of Seward alone. And this, in talking to some of the owners and operators, these were mostly fishing-oriented vessels. They expressed great interest in having some place to store their equipment while they're operating offshore. It would seem also that it would at least be in order for the state, particularly in the port of Seward, to have a bonded warehouse in place. This would be also true of the port of Anchorage. Anchorage has made the application here. A bonded warehouse operates customs in a preserve status to where goods of foreign nature can be brought into the U.S. and held in a closed area. Not manufactured, but not have any taxes paid on them, nor customs duty paid on them, therefore not tying up the operator's capital to be held for the vessel, and in this case, or the aircraft for re-export. There seems to be a growing demand in Alaska, for as long as we have foreign operators in the state, and we encourage, to some extent, foreign operators in the state to meet their needs, to bring goods from outside of the state at prices that they can afford to pay, perhaps from their own nation, to resupply their operations without entering them into the United States and paying duty on them. This is a growing trend. So we have an opportunity in that regard to take advantage and expand our economy by putting our workers to work maintaining those warehouses, operating forklifts and moving this equipment and loading and offloading the vessels. This is true also, perhaps, and we see again a possibility of quite a lot of foreign material coming into the United States, particularly into Alaska, to support oil field and pipeline operations. A great deal of our steel is being imported in a finished state. It is being coming in packaged, much dunnage attached to it, sometimes protective rings, as we're all familiar with the Alaska pipeline. There is no need for the U.S. operator, for instance, the U.S. buyer, to pay duty on that material when he's going to discard it. It enhances Alaska's operations, make it cheaper to operate in the state if they can discard and not pay duty on those items, process them in a foreign trade zone, which you cannot do in a bonded warehouse. Cannot manufacture in a bonded warehouse, can manufacture and process in a foreign trade zone. Bring those in, discard that material, destroy it or not pay duty on it, and then bring only what you need into the state, and bring it in and pay duty and tie up your capital on only as you need to tie up your capital. The goods can therefore remain in the foreign trade zone for a relatively long period of time without having to incur that expense. We see that possibility. The other possibility that I've come across recently is more than a possibility, it's a potential. I've been told that foreign operators, I've talked to some of the foreign shipping agents, the foreign vessels that come into the United States. One is due to arrive here in Anchorage in 2 or 3 weeks hauling steel from Japan, full load. Alaska Brick carries on that operation. It's the Alaska Corporation. Those foreign operators now are calculating in their fees and coming across the North Pacific into Alaska that they take about 7 days, 8 days transit time into Alaska across the ocean. To go to Seattle are adding about 4 days to that. And their shipping costs, which would of course be reflected upon how much they're charging or how much in removing Alaska's resources, how much they're willing to haul. Their shipping cost savings are about 10% compared to Seattle. Now, in talking to Louisiana Pacific, which loads ships out of Seward, that has represented a savings of about $40,000 to $50,000 per ship load. That is not something that is directly related to foreign trade zones, but to give some indication of the attractiveness of doing business in Alaska and an indication of some potentials that we're not grasping onto and making maximum use of. I think it behooves the state to take advantage, as long as the national policy is to give a share of our wealth to foreign operators, to take advantage to get the maximum benefit out of these foreign operators, and therefore to encourage them to do business in Alaska. There are many advantages to the Alaskan businessmen as well, to be able to have access to those foreign goods to reduce our own operating costs. and to get them as cheaply as possible through a form trade zone operation. Therefore, for those reasons, I reiterate my testimony that it is a good direction to move in, and I think it's approached the time now where it's well worth serious evaluation. I cannot go out and say we should install a foreign trade zone, because a foreign trade zone is dependent upon a definitely identified operator who's going to bear a good portion of the cost of that zone. But to me, the operators are now appearing on the horizon. The elements are there to put together a sales package, and it certainly would be a benefit. It appears to the state of Alaska. We wouldn't recommend it if we did not, and I think it bears and warrants sound evaluation at this time.
Mr. Chairman.
That's right. Yeah,
a couple of questions. You're granting the authority of the state as well as the home rule municipalities to apply. If the, let's use the municipality of Anchorage as an example, if what would they do? Would they apply directly to the Department of Commerce? What would the U.S. Department of Commerce, what would your role be?
Okay.
If the municipality just kind of walked me through how the process would flow.
Okay, I can't walk you through well because I've never done it, but let's put it this way. The application goes to the U.S. Department of Commerce.
By
the municipality. You have what you would call a sponsor. You have two classifications, basically. A sponsor of a zone and an operator of a zone. And to give you an example, the state of Hawaii is both the sponsor and the operator, and the people who work in the zone are state employees. Okay? I can see where the Alaska, the city of Anchorage, having really the only well-organized port staff in this state, because of the size of the port, probably has this in mind, that they would be both the sponsor and the operator, and they would make the facility available. So in the application process, they would go directly to the U.S. Department of Commerce. The U.S. Department of Commerce would come back to us and check if they have the authority to do so, which we are here saying. And then they would review their application for all of the elements listed in the law. Need for the zone, potential for the zone, economic impact, a design that would be acceptable to the U.S. Customs Service, an identified and fenced area, the ability to pay the customs wages, and all the elements that are required for approval. The approval of zones has grown rapidly in the last couple of years, and they have become more lenient in granting these zones. So the state's role, further answer your question, would be to encourage and to act as the liaison, as it were, with the federal government. As the federal government will always, as their usual procedure, work through us to work with the municipality bankers to set this up, make us aware, keep us in the meetings. We would have a definite line item approval authority, but we're giving them authority now to make the application direct.
All right, Mr. Chairman. We have a letter, which I assume, Ron, you may have seen from the Assistant Attorney General. Have you, regarding taxation?
I don't believe I have, no.
Mr. Chairman, if there's anyone that could answer, a lot of things I don't know, but I sure as heck don't know what a tax NEXUS is. Do you? I would be very interested regarding that. May not be taxed until it's admitted into domestic commerce. Power of the state to tax is based on establishing tax nexus with the taxpayer. I'd like to know what that means.
I myself do not know. This is the first time I've seen this letter.
Right. Hand me that one out of that folder down here.
Possibly your staff could, run that down while we're taking a look. And I guess my question, it kind of leads from this point, is are we impacting, I missed some of the flow of your words there, if we are impacting the municipality by this process, are we keeping products from being taxed? We are obviously during this interim time when it's there, but do you see that as being something that the local municipality will bear, say, by not bringing those goods into the under the real and personal property taxation of say a a municipality.
I don't follow you.
Okay, you're holding, in essence, as I understand, when these things are in a free port, they are not subject to taxes, right?
They're not subject to taxes, not subject to...
All right, I'm trying to see from how that would work insofar as a municipality goes and its ability to levy real and personal taxes. Is it a question of timing? What, you know, what effect would it have on a municipality?
The object is to, I would like to, I'm anxious to see the Anchorage municipality's laws itself, to see how they might envision applying taxes to the zone. But normally, the goods are maintaining these tax free and in a customs free status until they cross the boundaries of the zone into the U.S. Then they are fully taxable. Mm-hmm. And so what you are doing is deferring taxes. And in some cases, it's a tax deferral and a tax reducing mechanism. In some cases, reducing if they can change the form in such a way that when it does cross the zone, it would be in a lower duty bracket. It would not be wise for the municipality to tax in the zone. I mean, that would defeat part of their purpose. Anchorage is one of few cities that does have a warehouse tax, however, I understand. So that is something Anchorage is going to have to deal with, and I've talked to them a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. I ask Assistant Attorney General Lutke to come down later on. If you want to, obviously, you're going to...
Mr. Chairman, I see Deputy Director of Community and Region Affairs is here, and I don't know if she's prepared to speak on it, but it does call for home rule municipalities. I'm assuming home rule municipality means either home rule cities of the first class or home rule boroughs. Is that correct? Is that what a home rule municipality is?
I think so. I'm sorry, we aren't prepared to testify.
You are not prepared to testify.
We haven't had a chance to review it within the department. Mm-hmm. I came because it was just brought to my attention after I got back to the office that the committee was taking it up. So mm-hmm. I just to monitor.
Yeah, would have been very helpful, Mr. Chairman, to have that impact on, if any, on municipalities. It may be that you know it's it's not, but they're.
I don't know whether I've actually adequately answered your question or not, and I'm not
well,
sure
you
I
haven't
understand
really.
Your
well,
question.
No, I'm trying to find out if one was established in Anchorage, mm-hmm. what impact that would have on the municipality itself and their ability to levy and collect real and personal property taxes. You know, what is there a relationship? Is there a trade-off, for instance? If you have a this kind of a zone, does it mean you're keeping dollars out of taxation and in a sense passing that on to you know taking away the ability of a municipality to level
of course the
levy
purpose
taxes.
Of the zone is not they're usually quite small areas. I mean they would be less normally than half a city block and oftentimes nothing more than a large building and the activity happening in moves within that building or within screened areas within that building. Mm-hmm. So you're giving an incentive for something that happened that doesn't currently happen in the municipality, mm-hmm. and that particular piece of real estate isn't generating taxes at all. So you're not changing the status of its tax generation at this time. And hopefully, and the object is, of course, to create some employment that will give the municipality mm-hmm. more taxes from their residency outside. So.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. I noticed okay. that the Anchorage Assembly approves of the idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mayor Sullivan has been supporting it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I have no problem. I'm just trying to understand it and hope that might be there so I can better understand it.
Yeah, you're satisfied with one requirement I have. It's just a small area, mm-hmm. maybe a warehouse.
Not necessarily.
It can be large.
Fenced in there.
Got a whole petroleum refinery in Hawaii sitting in there, so.
I don't see any parameters here. That's a reason. That,
no. There are no geographic dimensional limitations on the surface.
But since the municipality of Anchorage has requested the bill and they're in favor of it, they're not going to do harm to themselves. No.
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to going on. I would like to know what nexus means, however. But
why don't we just hold this one and see if Mr. Ludke can come down, who gave us the Department of Law. Thank you very much, Juan. Our, could you stick around, Juan, just in case?
Sure.
We have a conflict of testimony or something. Well, what do you know here? We got Senate Resolution 21.
Brad, Frank asked it if he held until he gets back. He had a problem with it. He wanted to go check.
Good. Okay. Yeah. 491. Yeah, I did say I'd bring this before the committee, but I'm not very fond of it, personally. I don't know what the rest of you think. I made no promises. Is anybody else really excited about it?
Pretty testimony.
He was notified, but I understand he's playing racquetball. Not to be repeated out of this room. Okay.
Lisa Ledke.
Yes.
The Attorney General's office said that she'd rather not come down and comment on the bill.
She'd rather not?
Yes.
Well, would we rather for her to come as elected representatives of the people?
I told her, I said that Senator Bradley would like to have this meeting right now, and she said since it was months and months ago that she wrote this.
All I want to know is what nexus means. Is that too much?
Right, could you call her and ask her?
Just ask her what nexus. Ask her what nexus means.
Yeah, ask her. In addition to what the dictionary has to say,
what is nexus?
Frank, what is nexus?
That's all. You know, very simple.
Connecting group, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. All right. Maybe I could use some assistance. You can show me the word.
Okay, 491. Nobody seems to be interested in it, so well.
Yeah,
we
look on
the dictionary.
Boy, well, I tell you, the politics.
That's the name of this business.
Well, here's another one here that's not so bad, I think. Senate Bill 384. Just stepped out temporarily? Right. Okay, let's take up Senate Bill 384 next. Anybody else other than Mr. Wagner to testify on it?
What is it?
You leave?
Oh,
would you leave?
Did I?
Yeah.
How about
okay.
It is nexus.
What do you mean?
I don't know what it
no,
means.
No, he said he pronounced it wrong.
I pronounced it wrong on the telephone to her, and she corrected me quite quickly.
Well, there's several. One's archaic. The first one is supposed to be the more current pronunciation.
Said, I don't think our position is to go over and testify on anything that we didn't write.
Oh, it is, too.
She didn't know what... Did you ask her what nexus
No,
meant?
I didn't ask her. I didn't know what you wanted.
All we wanted was to know what nexus meant.
I thought you wanted to ask her.
The second time you went over, did you ask her what it meant?
I only went over one time.
Was somebody over there asking her?
That's what Burt Wagner's doing.
Oh, I see. Of course. Well, I'll just take... Yeah. Okay. Yes, Mr. Lee Coughlin. Yes, Lee.
My name is Lee Coughlin. I'm the president of Alaska Federal. I'm also the spokesman for the Alaska Student Loan League, primarily because I live here in Juneau, I guess. Basically, we are in support of Senate Bill 384. Thank you, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, for a tremendous job in the state of Alaska. They now have something close to 70% of all the mortgage business in the state. And I really don't see how the state could do without it at this present time in the state's development.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that again, Lee?
At present time, I don't see how the state could get along without Alaska housing at the present state of the state growth in housing.
Right.
However, though, there are some amendments that we would like to suggest as for consideration. Three small amendments on page 3, second line, at the very end of the line, the corporation may purchase any housing. I would like to suggest consideration of adding the words initial or refinanced housing. The bill is silent as to the question of handling refinanced housing. And in all of our business with the public, the question of refinancing our house, allowing the long-term resident to borrow their equity in the house, is something that Alaska residents really desire and I believe are entitled to. The present practice of Alaska housing has been to deny refinancing, primarily, I believe, because of the tax-exempt status of the bonds. However, in this bill, as I understand it, we're dealing with the tax money of Alaska, and the old residents of Alaska say, hey, that's my money just as much as it is these new people that are coming up to buy housing. And I'm entitled to some low-cost financing if anybody's entitled to it.
I certainly agree with it.
We add refinancing in there, it will allow the administration or the one who's handling the bill to be sure of legislative intent.
Mm-hmm. So is this correct, Lee? The corporation may purchase any initial or finance?
Or refinance.
Refinance, yeah. Okay. Initial or refinance housing.
I wonder if you could make that amendment known. It's a very substantial amendment, if you could make it known to Bert.
That's right.
Because it is a major change.
While you were out, on page 3.
Of 384, we're on?
Oh, 384, yes.
Okay.
Our Mr. Kaufman had an amendment on page 3, line 2, after the comma where it says the corporation may purchase any, we inserted initial or refinanced housing.
Okay. I think my only question would be the intent of that amendment be that where a person lived in a dwelling, that he could refinance that dwelling that he lived in without moving? That would be my only question.
That's what he's saying.
Okay. And if the amendment does that, I should point out there would, of course, be a lot more use of the program. Anyone above 9.5% there would be a severe motivation there for them to take advantage to move down to the
program. Is that intense clear enough?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's why I bring it up. It's absolutely a major change, is what I'm saying.
That's right.
It has some major implications depending on the amount of funding as to whether you would meet other goals, which might be creation of construction and new housing. You're going to be trading dollars, all those people that have high mortgages. You know, and I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm saying it's...
There's a tremendous amount of discretion that should be exercised in refinancing housing.
Sure.
But the value of housing is directly related to the value of the refinancing. The lower the interest rate, the more valuable the house is.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody who has lived here for 15, 20 years who has a higher rate loan than 9.5% or whatever the rate eventually winds up to be, his house will not be worth as much as the new house that comes on the market who has a lower rate loan that is subsidized by the state of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not fair for the old residents to be paying a higher rate of penalty for living here
Interesting.
Well, just because somebody buys a new house, Lee, doesn't mean that they're new residents. They could be moving up.
But it's not really fair for a person who has a house and wants to stay in that house. They shouldn't be forced to move out of that house to someplace else in order to take advantage of the state loan program, which is really what you're forcing people to do.
Interesting.
Yes, try it. I think it's a very good amendment. I agree.
Another way to turn.
Lee, if you could raise your voice a little bit. I recommended they put one of these things over that table. Make sure we're picking it all up. You have another amendment?
Yes, another idea I'd like to throw
a part
up.
A
suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
On page 3, line 8, where we have the word criteria. After the word criteria, I would like to suggest wording to the effect that the corporation shall make weekly forward commitments to purchase certain amounts of mortgage loans at a yield rate determined by the corporation, which will allow fair servicing fees and administrative costs for the originator of the loan. The mortgage loan which the corporation commits to purchase shall meet prudent lending criteria as set forth in regulations to be adopted by the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, is this one of your 3 minor amendments?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the one on my sent a letter to the
right.
Do we have it here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, what this amendment would do is it would make the operation of Alaska Housing very similar to the way the federal programs on housing are operated. Under this amendment, the corporation could issue a commitment to buy so many dollars in loans that meet the lending criteria set forth by the corporation. This would cut down the loan processing time as the time the person makes their application until they receive their money to something between 3 and 5 weeks.
Mr. Chairman, why?
Why?
I mean, how does this work? Explain to us.
The corporation will issue a commitment to a lender. They'll buy so many thousand or million dollars worth of loan that meets the lender, or meets the corporation's criteria.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is that not possible under the present method now? What are we...
Under the present method, the corporation says, yes, we'll buy some loans. You submit the loans to us, and we will approve them, and then we will submit it back to you. Well, that process, because it's a split processing process for the lender, takes anywhere from 8 to 24 weeks. From the time you make your application until you get your money.
Mr. Chairman, what's the net result? You expedite, but is there any difference in quality of loan and what you approve or don't? If that's a fine idea, why isn't it done? Why is it done in another
it's
way?
It's done on the federal level. It's not done on the state level.
Why?
I do not know why the state is not done. I don't know if they're not sure their funding or just what their process is. All right. It could be any number of them.
I see.
The federal programs, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, all handle their forward commitments this way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, kind of think of it.
See, under a process of forward of commitments, the burden is on the lender to underwrite the loan in conformity with the guidelines that the corporation issues.
No, just rereading it to make sure if I did have any of it. Rachel Wagner, do you have any differences with it, or do you have it before you?
Oh, I have it here. Perhaps when I testify on the bill, Mr. Chairman,
okay.
I can comment on it.
All right. Okay.
The Third Amendment is also on page 3 and on page 4, line 27. And that... page 3, line 16, portion or proration of any bank or trust company, or bank or trust company, I would like to suggest considering inserting the words insured bank, savings and loan, or trust company. The addition of the word insured more or less guarantees the quality of the lending institution that they're dealing with.
Mr. Chairman, do we have any bank that is not insured?
No, we're only in the state of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the lower 48, they do have banks that are not insured. The purchases of mortgage-backed securities in the lower 48 give a higher rating to some to an institution that is insured by the government.
I didn't know that there were any other insured.
There are some uninsured lenders in the lower 48.
Can you imagine Julius Brecht allowing one to
no.
exist?
Can they do business in Alaska? Are they? Can they do business under this law?
No, they can't do business under the law, but you see, you're trying to build up the credibility of the mortgage-backed security that you'd be selling in the lower 48 states. Mm-hmm. And if your act relates to an insured institution, it has a lot more bearing.
What's the other amendment?
It's on...
No, but another page.
On page 4.
Just the insertion of the word insured.
Insured bank,
and
savings
and
loan.
Yeah, I thought could have said financial institutions, I guess.
Yes. On page 4, line 27. The same three words.
Say them again.
Same thing.
With insured banks.
I was still writing on that.
Page 4, line 27, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Same amendment.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much, Lee. I didn't know we had any uninsured banks. 2 years ago, when
we don't.
Not in Alaska.
No, not in Alaska. I didn't think that any federal law would permit it. I got quite an education when we revised the voluminous banking statutes 2 years ago, you know. Julius came over in the evenings and tutored me. We went through page by page. And,
Mr. Chairman.
What? Didn't get overtime. I don't think either, did he? Good state employee. We got any word, Mike?
Mr. Chairman, Leslie's here, and perhaps you could help us.
Yes, Leslie, could you enlighten us on one little, mostly one word, but maybe more than that, in regard to Senate Bill 468, and I gave my copy of the, you have the comments there that Leslie wrote. We looked up the word nexus. It means a connecting group.
That's correct.
Senator Strzelecki.
Okay, but what does that mean in connection to what we're talking about?
Question, and I think that's still a
pretty simple.
Foreign trade.
Foreign trade. What's the number of that one again?
468.
Got an extra copy of
the bill?
Yeah, I gave mine away.
The power of the state to tax is related to the,
not the bill,
state's is
that
connection
of all
with
kinds.
What it's taxing. Right. In other words, taxation is directly connected with the benefits a state confers on an entity, or the location of that entity or that property within the state. State does not have the jurisdictional power to tax corporations, businesses, or property which has no connection to it and which, on which it does not confer any benefits. That essentially is a tax nexus. Generally, at least when you're talking about corporations doing business in the state or businesses operating within the state, there'll be a number of different degrees of nexus. And for example, the nexus required to sustain jurisdiction over an entity will be less than the nexus required to tax an entity, which in turn will be less than the nexus required to license or regulate an entity under a regulation or a regulatory statute. Does that answer your question?
It's confusing. No, I think I understand.
Okay. But it really comes down to a benefit analysis. Has the state given anything for which it can ask something in return? And what it's asking in return is a tax. There's a number of cases now, or one primary case now before the Alaska Supreme Court, involving tax nexus with fishermen, the sale of crab in the state, and that has not yet been decided. So it really comes down to an analysis of a particular fact situation, looking at all the elements, looking at the benefits the state confers on the property or on the party or on the business or on the corporation, and saying, do those benefits warrant the assertion of tax jurisdiction over that entity?
And the net bottom line on this is there, you see no problem with the foregoing of any tax, creation of a trade zone. There's no constitutional problem.
No, there isn't a constitutional problem there at all.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you coming down.
Thank you very much, Lester.
We now have had a lesson in nexus.
Yeah, look it up in my Black's Law Dictionary. I probably should have it anyway.
Mr. Chairman, would you take a motion a bit out of sync on 468?
Yes, after we change the tape, if you don't mind. Just making a note there for a second. Okay, tape two.
Make a motion to send out of committee SB 468 with individual recommendation.
Any objection?
I'm a dupe.
Okay. Oh, we should be able to get out here. Awesome. Oh, get back to to 384. Right.
Do you need me further, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. I don't think so. Well, thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I had to step out of room and call the AG when you were discussing 384, so I don't know if anyone kind of gave you an overview of it. And basically, what it is, is we're all aware that the HFC has encountered difficulties with their tax exempt status. This bill was drafted when this question was still before the U.S. Congress, and it still is. U.S. House has passed out a bill that would severely curtail HFC, and for all intents and purposes, practically shut it down as far as tax-exempt financing goes. Of course, it will now go to the U.S. Senate, and what will happen, I'm not a mind reader. However, what will happen will probably happen after the legislature adjourns, so it was felt appropriate, the administration drafted this bill to set up a device that would keep mortgage money available at a reasonable rate for the people of Alaska in the event that the utilization of tax-exempt bonds was completely precluded. Basically, what the bill does is amend HFC statutes to provide for the arranging and selling of participations in a pool of mortgages. It's patterned very similarly after the federal Ginnie Mae concept. There is an appropriation bill, and I don't know what the referrals were on that, but nothing in this world is free. And what you do is you take these mortgages, you make a bunch of loans, you group them together, and you sell interest in these pools of mortgages. And that is an oversimplification of what the bill does. There are a few other particular items you might want to be aware of in the bill. It does create an insurance fund to insure these mortgages, and the intent there is you're going to be competing nationally against numerous entities trying to sell mortgages, and you want to make yours as attractive as possible. As far as the amendments that Mr. Kaufman addressed, as far as the forward commitments go, I have no problem with that. My only suggestion would be if the committee does adopt that memo, you may want to make it permissive to give the corporation the ability to make forward commitments, because I am not a mortgage banker by trade, and if you lock the corporation into requiring forward commitments, there might be perhaps some difficulty with one financial institution or another. But if the permissive power is there and it's a good idea, I don't see why it wouldn't be adopted. And as far as the refinancing goes, that's a very tough question. I don't have the absolute answer of what should or should not be done there. But if you do openly and blanketly allow refinancing, the volume is going to be astronomical, because there are a lot of people that have mortgages above 9.5% now, and all of those that have mortgages above 9.5% are going to want to refinance down to 9.5%. And that money is not free. It's going to come initially charged by an appropriation from the general fund, and then there's going to be that interest rate differential that's going to have to be made up, so it's going to cost something. If it were the committee's pleasure to allow refinancing, I do have one suggested amendment to Mr. Kaufman's amendment. And if you're going to go with refinancing, my suggestion would be that you limit the refinancing to the balance of one's mortgage. The intent, I believe, is to offer those who might have, say, a 12% mortgage out now, that 9.5%. So instead of letting them refinance and draw out equity and also get a lower rate, if the committee is so inclined to allow refinancing, why not just let them refinance the balance, and then they obtain the lower rate? And hopefully that may keep some of the volume in balance. Now, you are basically what you're doing, if a guy's got a house that's increased in value to $150,000, you know, he won't be able to draw that equity, but he would be able to move into a lower rate. So maybe that's some compromise that the committee were so inclined. One more thing I should point out is the administration bill does change the makeup of the board of directors of AHFC, and it's a substantial change, and I thought some of the committee members may not have had a chance to look at that. Basically what it does is on page 2, starting on line 7, section 2, it places the commissioners of revenue, and administration on the board. The Commissioner of Commerce is already on the board. So what in effect you have done is place it entirely in the executive branch. The administration feels that this is what we would ideally want. However, we also feel that there is benefit to be gained by public input. And if the committee were so inclined to put some public members on the board, perhaps delete the Department of Administration, there would be no objection as far as we're concerned.
Does anyone want to concur with that?
Questions.
Does anyone concur with deleting the Department of Administration and putting one or more?
Well, I would
you
suggest
see, that's six.
You'd want to end up with an odd number of board members, Mr. Chairman.
And six members.
So if you had two administration and you put three public, that'd be five.
Yeah.
That would seem like a reasonable compromise.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment, Commissioner Ron. So what's so wrong about the where? You feel it's too far out there, not enough control?
Yes, well, you might be aware that there's been some dissatisfaction with AHFC in the past year, and all of it is not the corporation's fault. However, it has had a seven-member board, and the Commissioner of Commerce is on that board. And both the executive and the legislative requested AHFC to do and perform certain acts in regards to, say, rural programs, mobile homes, and other things. And while those have come to pass now, it took a couple of years longer than most people felt should have been required. The reason for tightening up the board, that's probably a poor word choice, is it's very likely with the tax exempt status severely curtailed, there'll be quite a bit of direct state funds invested, and it would seem appropriate that a public corporation that has quite a bit of public money be more responsive to the executive legislative branch.
I noticed in SB1 we had this morning that the Commission of Commerce Revenue Commissioners of Commerce, Revenue, and Natural Resources. So I have a little objection.
Sorry, I haven't had a chance, as I indicated, to read that version of the bill as it has.
Well, I think that's a good amendment, in my opinion. Anybody have any objection to that one? Tell you what we'll do. Do you have any more, by any chance?
No, those were my only suggested amendments, Mr. Chairman.
I have one, but we'll get with you and double-check it with Lee also. After we pass this out, unless somebody prefers not to, and then let everybody see what they are before we head it into the Senate. Is that agreeable?
Mr. Chairman, I think you need to check on the suggestion by Burke regarding limiting to the, refinancing the balance. I don't know if that's a practical
thing. That's why I said I wanted
when we talk about percentages and equity and some other questions. I just think it may be a great idea, but I'm not sure if it's meritorious, if it's possible. I just don't know.
Yeah, I've never known it to be done that way. But it's a better way. It helps the guy who, did get a loan at 10 and 3 quarters or something and wants to refinance it if you just do it on a balance.
Yeah. I don't know mechanically if it could be made to work or not. I don't see why not.
The way I've got it written here, it may be a little different with you. That's why I wanted to check it out with you. And maybe we want to discuss a little more, too, is the corporation, this is line 2, page 3, the corporation may purchase any housing for refinancing housing. It's I gotta go screw up there just a minute.
What about putting priorities in there?
How would you want to put priorities in?
Well, I don't know, you know, you could establish in any number of ways, new construction and refinancing, or new construction, refinancing, second homes. I don't know how you want to do it, but it just seems to me we're going to get a lot more bang for the buck what we're looking for, and I'm in favor of refinancing, but I want to make sure that the building industries keep going in this state.
Yeah. Lee, you have some words of wisdom?
I really don't see the state's going to be in the mortgage business. Right now, they got about 70-80% of it.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to be in it. They might as well be all the way in the mortgage business.
Oh, all right. Lee, could you come up a little closer?
Okay. I said the state is going to be in the mortgage business. They might as well be all the way in the mortgage business. And once they do that, they are actually loaning money for buying mortgages on property which has a certain amount of collateral value. And whether it's a refinanced house or an existing house, it's worth so much money.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't make any difference why we should place a limit on it. Whether the house is old, it's already had a mortgage on it, but it's new construction. It still has so much money as determined by an appraisal. And that's really what the state is lending on. And I really think you might be running into some problems with the discrimination between somebody who has lived in the property and somebody who's just going to be buying the property.
Uh-huh.
I realize it's going to use more tax dollars to inform the subsidy, but it's all going to Alaskans. And I think that's part of one of the things we want to get into the economy now, of course, take money back, flowing into the Alaskan pockets so they can spend it.
That's the reason they weren't refinancing when money was a little more scarce, of course.
I think it's because of the tax problem. But since we're not dealing with tax-free bond money.
Do you have a question, Mr. Lee?
Well,
Mr. Lee.
I just have a statement on that, Mr. Chairman. In regards to what Mr. Kaufman says, if somebody's already paying 12% on a mortgage and we refinance it at 8%, well, we're in effect subsidizing that person for the 4%. Well, what difference does it make where we subsidize that person, whether we subsidize it through the bonding method or through the refinancing method? And I tend to agree with Mr. Kaufman that we seem to be discriminatory by not refinancing.
Well, you know, that came up with the veterans bill too, you know. We got quite a bit of testimony on it. We want to refinance at the current rate, you know, whatever it happens to be. And that's understandable.
22.
Then we got plenty of money, maybe. The oil pipeline doesn't get sabotaged.
All you're talking about is the difference between the growing mortgage rate on the lower 48 and whatever the Alaskan rate ones have been. That's all the state subsidizing. They're not subsidizing the whole mortgage, just the small difference.
Well, yeah.
I would point out that while I agree with him, I would suggest that the difference may not be so small. This bill contemplates 9.5, and I believe a conventional mortgage now is going for about 17. While small is a matter of each one's opinion, you're talking about a portfolio that runs a couple hundred million dollars a year. You're talking about a sizable amount of general funds to provide subsidies. I agree with the priorities. Maybe we have so much money we don't need it. However, I've been blessed or unblessed with running loan programs, and it seems like I always have to set some kind of priorities just to get the damn things done.
So. Yeah, I can understand it.
My fear is that some of the refinance loans are going to look so attractive that they're going to be the obvious things to go to because they're nice and safe, and you'll have an obvious return. You have somebody's been paying on a 14 or 12% mortgage for 8 years. They never missed a payment. Boy, that's the kind you want in your portfolio, you know. But that's not going to do my builders any good back home, and that's not going to do all my service people back home any good with that money just switching around unless they're taken care of first. You know, the problem we have back home in Eagle River is that we don't have construction money for new homes. And so we have our contractors dying, our trade people are dying, our service people are dying, and I think they should be taken care of first, and then if we have, you know, the money, fine, I'm into refinancing, that sounds great.
Can I address that problem? Okay. The practice of forward commitments would eliminate that problem. You see, in new construction or revamping loans, there is far more revenue, so to speak, for the lender in putting that kind of loan together than there is for refinancing. Refinancing is very small. It's more of a service problem for a lender. So in your case, Senator, there would be more lenders who would take their commitments that they purchased from the corporation and use that money to finance a builder or a developer because they're going to receive more revenue than he is going to from refinancing an existing loan. He's not getting any new customers that way.
I see.
So the lender would be more prone to use your approach and solve your problem. But that's really the lender's problem. It should not be the state's problem. The state should say they'll buy loans meeting this criteria from approved lenders. That's all the state has to say. Leave the lenders to determine who they're going to put their money out to.
Well, that's what worries me, though, because they might decide to put their money out into the safer and easier loans that won't do the building trades much good.
Then they won't receive any revenue. See, the revenue comes from new loans, not from refinancing.
Well, they must get something out of a refinancing loan.
Very, very small. Already pays for the time to do it.
Sound a little more palatable?
There's probably no easy way out.
No,
my question
we're
is,
all
you
sympathetic
know,
with it.
I would agree with Senator Kelly, whether he wants to prioritize or not, at least a letter of intent, if the bill ever finally passes, or wording to give the corporation the ability to prioritize, because if the money spreads continue like they have in the past, perhaps I'm wrong and Mr. Kaufman's right, but I have a strong hunch there's going to be more demand than there is supply. And then it's going to be necessary to prioritize. I think that may not, I realize we're very, very wealthy, but there's also
other needs, obviously.
A lot of other
needs. You know, Bert, we've had refinancing in our loans before, but we did prioritize. If you
yes.
just did it, you know?
In veterans right now, Mr. Chairman, we are prioritizing.
That's right, we sure are.
Well, is there anything in this that says you can't?
Not in this bill, and I cannot speak to the whole AHFC statute without going back and looking at it.
It doesn't say you can or you can't, except
and
for that amendment.
I just could not answer that question.
Well, I think we should allow it, but I think we should allow the ability to prioritize.
Yeah, could we check that out so that that ability is there and we're sure it is.
Why don't we,
okay.
You know, this supposedly was our deadline, but I think this bill is important enough that we...
I'm considering this week as a deadline. I don't know about you. Because we couldn't get stuff out of
yeah.
Committee substitutes.
I figured we could sneak in.
Yeah, that's the way I
could. I know last year we set deadlines and we... extended in about a week. I didn't want to depend on that.
Well, are you going to come up with a committee substitute and bring it back, Brad?
Yeah. Yes, but I'm not sure we've solved this particular problem. Well,
you know, you may just want to add another sentence on, at the end of that sentence, line 8. I believe you, page 3, line 8, you've added some words there dealing with forward commitments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It may be appropriate, Mr. Chairman, just to add an additional sentence. And I'm not a wordsmith of sorts, but that would be an appropriate place to allow the corporation to establish by regulation priorities for the purchasing of loans from financial institutions. The purchasing of loan covers everything because this is 100% secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would give the corporation the ability to say to both allocate and purchase within different categories.
Yeah. Leave it to the discretion of the board members?
Yes. I think, while it would not be nice to
got a bunch of hard noses,
in concrete,
regulation.
The mortgage market is changing, and I think you're going to have to leave some flexibility with it.
Why don't we work this out then, and then we'll send this around for everybody's approval later. And then, rather take up a lot of people's time here. There's only so many ways we can go, and I think maybe that might be it. Right place to add it to. I need to think about it a little bit.
You'll come back with that.
Right. If everybody doesn't agree, we'll work it over again.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
But right now, do you think maybe it might be better by regulation, by our discretion of the board?
Mr. Chairman,
if
you put it in regulation, the board passes on all those regulations.
That's right.
And while regulation connotates something negative, there is something good about it. You do hold public hearings. You do solicit input from the public. You do have to travel to Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau and say, hey, this is what we think the priority should be in this corporation. And you either get nailed to the cross or, yes, it's a good idea. And so I think a regulation is an appropriate way to set priorities in this particular.
Oh, yeah. Except for the regulation, what is it, after 90 days, it automatically is in effect if nobody, if you have a hearing, nobody shows up, nobody says anything, and you don't do anything?
I can assure you on this one, I think people would show up.
Yeah. Mister. I've been to some of these, you know, hearings you've had, and nobody shows. So automatically that bureaucratic regulation is in effect, just like that.
Mr. Chairman.
Then we complain about it, we legislators, and we don't attend either.
Would it be possible, and Bert, I ask this general question, would it be possible to establish a percentage type formula in here for refinance loans?
Well, let them do it, Frank. Let HFC do it.
Well, the problem is if you do a percentage and you miss, and all of a sudden there's no demand for percentage A, and you've set it by regulation, all of a sudden you've got, you know, the slop there. What do you do with that?
Our regulation, I guess, is the best way. You have public input again, anyway, supposedly to do. Okay, we'll put that together, but I have one more. Most important one of all. On page 3, line 27, our delete from the word veteran through line 28, the word other. Can you follow that? Page 3, line 27.
We're taking a big gamble, aren't we? We better make it.
This morning.
Through the word other in 28.
You want to keep your eye on this one in case something else doesn't happen, Frank. Catch it in the house.
Senator?
And?
You need to leave section C.
What?
Delete the whole section.
No.
No, I don't think so. It establishes the interest rate for other. So just state bar, it says, and the interest rate to a state bar does not exceed 9.5%. Now on the next page, page 4, line 2, delete the last sentence, line 2 and all of 3, where it says, in this section, state veteran means a veteran eligible for a loan under AS-26. That's a title and chapter for a veteran's loan. That sound satisfactory?
444 doesn't pass
Bradley. I know that's not in accordance with a governor's bill.
That's what I'm saying. You keep your
684
sniffer out over as the session goes on down the trail here, Frank.
This morning I thought it was an April Fool because they told me they're going to
be. We're counting on you too. If this makes it and the other one doesn't, we expect this back in. It's just a temporary amendment.
It's not even a half a percent, you know?
There
nine and a half to nine, like
there
four.
There was just a deletion. There was no addition, Mr. Chairman.
I don't think you need to put it in there because it's supposed to be in another bill.
Wait a minute, I got an idea. Let's add 444 to this bill.
It comes from bad to worse than we will, but...
By golly, now I'm thinking, huh?
Yeah.
Just tack it onto this tiny little measure.
Keep that in the back of your head, but I've been... given a few promises here, they don't materialize. Just like this morning, I thought it was April Fool's, you know? But that was a legitimate mistake. They didn't take that veterans out, the MAG card machine just kept going and they made a mistake in legal services. Well, that was really being betrayed. Okay, Bert, we'll get with you in the morning. Will you be available tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's
a all right, just want to get this one passed out.
Yes, yes.
Close
yes.
The thing.
But,
hold on.
It isn't that I'm not medical, it's just that I have other goals, as busy as we were.
Any further discussion? No discussion?
Yes.
You want to make amendments?
Yeah.
Tell me that. Concur with amendments?
Oh, I'll concur, sure.
What is it?
Everybody, we made one amendment here while you were gone.
I didn't know you were going to, I thought you were going to bring the bill
back.
You said
you were going to bring
out.
It back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but our... It'd be Thursday to do that.
Well, what's wrong with Thursday?
We won't turn it in. Well, we can do it then.
I'd like to see the amendments we're making.
Well, you'll see them before we turn it in, but we'll do that then. We'll catch us Thursday. The last one here is right here. One of them. To a state bar.
You're just, what page is it?
Page 3. So you'll have something to do tonight.
To a state,
interest
rate.
Do we have any personal indebtedness?
Yeah, line 27. Start right here.
Veteran.
All of line 27. 928.
A big business loan and a big fishing loan, and all of a sudden you change bankruptcy every step.
Right, and now the next big.
The limitations.
This section stays around that. Last sentence.
How many programs are in there?
Line two.
Where is that?
17.
Last, that's not the public call.
This is the last sentence, right?
It's like the student loan, kids go through school, the first thing they do is get their bankruptcy, and they get out of money.
Okay, we'll work this over here. Bring it back Thursday.
That Thursday?
Anybody have anything else to discuss?
Are we gonna take any action on this?
No. I just, we take it out, so I can't promise you things.
Oh, is that the one Frank wanted?
He doesn't want.
Huh?
No.
No.
What, 21?
Okay, well, we'll try to get the guest call center.
I think Pratt says it's just gonna lay, the government's gonna.
Holman. We probably shouldn't see if anybody wants to speak on it, not with.
Yeah, but, no, wait, does Bergen want this one?
Bergen didn't propose to be Holman.
He doesn't want it.
I thought.
I think that. He does.
Did you find, was he committed to at least bringing it up?
I don't know, he didn't define. Just Holman.
Bring it up from here.
Yeah.
Let's bring it up, see if anybody's here to testify, if they're not, we'll just put it back.
I thought we already did.
No, we haven't touched it.
Do we have anybody here that wishes to testify on Senate Resolution 21? No.
I'd say.
Holman was notified, so he's playing around the ball, if that's his interest. I can try to the corner. I don't like that kind of politics anyway. So I.
Rita?
No, sure not.
I am beat.
What 491?
What was 491?
That one did the same thing.
Oh, okay.
You're real happy with that, aren't you? I know you are.
Catch you next year.
Thanks, Bert.
That one was all about.
I think I know, but I think there's a little vindictiveness there.
I sure think that he could show.
Thank you, Lee. Very much.
I mean, I don't like that at all.
I don't either. I'm getting sick of it.
I got three bills.